Welcome to Paddling Adventures Radio. I'm Sean Rowley, and with me is Derek Specht.
Hello.
Derek.
Hello, sir.
What's happening?
I have discovered, I saw a story today, and it was freshly published, so I think it's just like very recent, like over the weekend, but another monolith has showed up in the deserts outside of Vegas.
Is it outside of Vegas?
It's in the mountains that surround the city.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I know that the first one that they believe showed up in 2020 was... I think that's the first one. But, I mean, it was... Took everybody by storm.
Yes, because it was the first one that was discovered.
Now, apparently they've been...
They've been found in England. They've been found in downtown Vegas. They've been found west of Vegas. They've been found now north of Vegas. And so it's a lot of desert locations. And unfortunately, we've discussed this before. The unfortunate part is when whoever did this installation, they say it's
aliens.
So well built that even aliens would be impressed by it.
Really?
And yeah, they said the seams and stuff. They say it is hollow, but it is almost looks seamless, and it's perfectly mirrored. It's surgical steel, surgical stainless steel. And they say it's a fascinating monolith to look at out in nature. But unfortunately, we can't have nice things because when they are discovered, whoever put up the first one that was discovered, they came and got it right away within a day or two. Because unfortunately, people will traipse over over anything. They'll kill animals and plants and whatever just to get to see it and get a selfie with it, right? So good for them. They put it in. It was interesting. It was neat. And then they came and pulled it out. This one is probably not going to last long. Somebody's going to come and take it away. And because people are idiots.
If I came across one of those, I'd steal it.
I would too. I'm going to protect the environment. I will steal it.
Right? It is mine.
But yeah, it's unfortunate that... And it's that social media frenzy that comes out of a lot of stuff. It's like... People, oh, look at that. It's a big drop-off. I'm going to get a sunflower shot, the flower meadow shot, the cornfield shot. And then people come in and just traipse and
the alien probe shot.
The alien probe shot. But it's unfortunate that social media drives people to do these things because, like I said, you can't have nice things because you get some individuals that ruin it for everybody.
Right.
Right, so... It's unfortunate. But yeah, so yeah, monolith was found north of Vegas in the mountains.
I wonder how much it costs to build one of those. Because I think the one we saw destroyed when they took it apart was all plywood inside.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, holding it all together. And then they mounted these shiny bits.
Well, they're saying that the metal itself and polishing it is not cheap. Because it's surgical stainless steel to a very high polish, mirror finish polish. Like the one that they just found, the photographer had a shot of it, and I believe the person who took a shot of it was the police, because they went to investigate, took a shot, posted on their social media, but it's so mirrored, it's so perfectly mirrored that it almost disappeared from the reflections in it, because it was reflecting the mountains. It's a triangle. And so it perfectly reflected the mountains around them in the monolith itself, so that it almost disappeared in the shot. It was so mirrored.
So they took a picture of it to take to the police.
No, the police took a picture. The police investigated, took a picture, and the police posted it on their own social media page.
But where is the monolith right now? Question is, leave it? Or did they actually
take
it with them?
No, they left it.
Why?
It's not illegal.
Are you sure?
I don't think nothing's stopping you. Like, you go to any mountain
peak. You're erecting a man-made structure.
Sure.
In protected areas.
I don't know that it was a protected area. It wasn't a park. It was just a mountaintop. I don't know. I can't remember the mountaintop that they named. And I don't know that I'd even want to say it, because then there'd be a
gym. Mountain gym.
But yeah, it's. I imagine it'll be gone in a day or two. Whoever's putting these up, I'm very curious about it. Like, I hope I live long enough to discover the person who's planting these things, because they're saying that the installations look very professional. It's like an artist installation, and they're so reflective. They're like perfect mirrors. And so it's just, I find it very fascinating and interesting.
It's a plot by Elon Musk. If you take all the positions that these have been found and you draw a line from each and every single one of them.
I never thought of that. Can you imagine?
And from space, you hit it with a laser. Pew, 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 pew. And what does it hit?
Well, they're set in mortar, so it's not planted by aliens. I don't think aliens are going to come and put a mortared stainless steel monolith in the ground, though. So it's,
how do you know?
It's
maybe they're bored.
It's a bored artist, not a bored alien.
How do you know? Oh, are you saying that aliens don't get bored? Is that what you're saying, Derek?
They wouldn't want to
draw. You heard it here first. Derek does not believe that aliens get bored.
I don't think they'd want to draw attention to themselves.
Well, they're not. They're being sneaky. It's just some of us know.
I've seen enough movies. It never ends well for the aliens.
Right?
Or Earth.
Maybe they're just like landing pods or something. That's where they're just like, okay, find that little structure. That's where you beam down to. That's where the invasion starts.
That's the beaming point on Star Trek. There always used to put these tripod things with a force field on it. It's little, like, this is our beam in zone.
Yeah, the little boosters. Yeah.
Now you have to climb down the mountain to anally probe all the humans.
Prepare the anal probe. That'd be kind of cool to find out who's doing it and why.
Yeah.
But I think half the fun is the mystery of not knowing.
That is. Right? That
but they need to be putting them in places that aren't going to get trampled. Like the White House lawn. Here's my challenge, Mr.
That is a big
Mr.
challenge.
Alien, bored alien guy.
Alien installation. Right? Yeah,
alien installation on the White House lawn.
They're probably listening to us right now. Careful what you say.
Probably.
I'm not talking about the aliens. I'm talking about the White House.
Yeah, well, they can kiss my...
kiss my grits.
Stay strong, my alien brothers. Well, let's talk about canoeing.
Yes.
I learned something new this week. First and foremost, I am not a partaker of smoking. Never have been. I am not a partaker of smoking the old sweet Mary Jane. Although, when I'm driving to work and back, I always smell other people that are.
Which is strange and wrong. Like, why are you smelling it on a highway?
It's got to be their invisible
passengers.
I'm not an expert when it comes to the terms and the experience of rolling joints. I remember watching my dad and grandfather put tobacco in the old rolling papers and lick it and then roll it, you know, between the fingers and that sort of deal. I remember my dad got an automatic rolling machine.
I had one of those.
That you put the big, long, like foot-long piece of paper in, then you put the tobacco in, and you wet it, and then...
Yeah.
And then you took the razor blade and cut them into unfiltered cigarettes. That being said, thanks to their convenience and portability, pre-rolls are enjoying increased market share, accounting for 15.3% sales in the United States, one-third of sales in Canada during 2023.
Now it's legitimate. You use math.
Right? With their popularity on the rise, manufacturers faced a crucial decision. Do they prioritize meeting volume demands or adhere to the quality standards that made their brand popular by continuing to rely on hand rolling? Well, Cuban cigars, apparently the best ones are hand rolled.
Yes.
But these are different.
Mm-hmm.
Consumers have a nearly religious respect for hand rolling. And see, there's other stuff I didn't know. But they also demand price consciousness. Yes, I want to smoke the weed, the devil's lettuce, but I want it at a good price. It can only be achieved at scale via automation. The goal of automation is to achieve pre-roll perfection by controlling the density achieved by uniformly distributing the ground particulate through the entire length of the joint. This provides consistency in the pre-roll's flavor profile and appearance. Mm-hmm.
Everybody's wondering, where is he
going? I'm going somewhere with this. Even density matters most because of its impact on burn. When the particulate is evenly packed, the joint burns consistently from start to finish. This allows consumers to savor the flavor and aroma of the strain without any harshness or uneven draw.
A portion of our listeners already know where you're going. Most of them have no idea.
Most, because I had no idea where I was going until I read this, because the title that I saw is the only reason I clicked on this. Proper airflow is essential for a satisfying smoking experience. Pre-rolls, even with density, ensure that there are no air pockets or obstructions within the joint, allowing for a smooth and effortless draw each time. The result? A highly enjoyable smoke without canoeing.
Uneven burn.
Uneven burn, or even the need for constant relighting. Who knew there was another type of canoeing? The article I saw said stop pre-rolling and canoeing. What? What is this? Who is this a new sport? People are rolling canoes now? I come onto this page and it's all about rolling joints. And I'm like, what? So I had to go to the top, find in this page, canoe.
Yeah,
it brought me down to that. I'm like, oh, for crying out loud. You apparently knew what the term meant.
I did.
Explain why you knew this, Derek.
Well, I don't smoke marijuana.
Anymore?
I tried to as like a teenager, but apparently it doesn't agree with me. It made me sick every time. But I did hand roll my own cigarettes as a teenager. Because it was cheap. Couldn't afford much as a teenager. I didn't have a job. Anyway, so but it was a joke amongst us. Oh, it's canoeing, man. Oh, really? Dude. So I watched my friends smoke cigarettes and marijuana, but I didn't. But I just smoked cigarettes. But yeah, we always talked about canoeing.
I've never heard that term before.
Burn up the side, and you would leave an empty gap like a canoe in your roll.
Yeah, never heard that term before in my entire life. Mm-hmm. I'm so sheltered. Anyway, I'm going through all these different articles and stuff. Oh, what's happening in the canoeing world right now? Yeah. Stop pre-rolling and canoeing. What? Who's rolling canoes? I would love to see somebody roll a canoe. Like, roll it over and roll it right back
roll.
Up.
Like a kayak, right?
Like, I'd stand up and applaud that fella. No, it had absolutely nothing to do with it. Anyway, that's my rant for the week.
Yeah. So I'm not a pothead. I'm just going to add, I'm not a pothead.
He's not a pothead anymore.
I don't smoke that.
He does not smoke the devil's lettuce, the sweet Mary Jane. Get yourself a little something out in the backyard that the neighbors hate.
Yeah.
Yeah, all that sassafras. But you did find something pretty cool this week. A couple somethings, actually.
Yeah, very interesting.
So hundreds, not a couple.
Yeah.
Hundreds of elementary and high school students from the Thames Valley District School Board launched boats they built and decorated into the water at Fanshawe Lake.
Did you watch the video with the article that I sent you?
Mm-hmm.
These are very well-painted boats.
Yeah? Everybody got to design their own.
They looked professionally painted. So these kids did a fantastic... I thought, you know, they're going to be slapped on. These are beautiful boats that they made.
Yeah. Students tested 14 boats they designed for the STEM to Stern program's third annual regatta. Its founder, retired teacher David Vine, said the project allows students to gain a real-world understanding of what they learn in classrooms. See, this, and there's a couple things in here that remind me of Kevin Callan.
Oh, yeah.
For some students, it's the first time in their lives that they're being trusted to do something that is so significant as to actually build their own boat, and not just build it, but hop into it and take it for a row.
Yeah, you're really trusting your own craftsmanship there. Right.
If it floats, you pass. It's making the learning relevant to them so they understand when they're in a classrooms and learning things about math and science, they can actually see now the applications. Students finish a rowboat within 30 hours, the equivalent of an entire school week. That's fast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? They build pieces, put them together, paint them with a design of their choice, Find prepares the difficult pieces, and guides students as they use power tools and equipment like lumber and plywood. Vine started Stem to Stern in 2018 after finishing a nearly three-decade career as a woodworking educator. He's continued the program in schools even after his retirement due to its popularity among students, especially once they test their boats on the water. I'd think so.
Yeah.
You don't get that sort of thing anymore. My kids didn't get shop class.
Exactly. So most of the time you come out of something in school where you have a grade as a result.
Yeah.
Oh, I got a grade. I got this. I got that. It's like you don't end up with something that's you can touch and take home type thing, right?
The best way to see the success of what a student has done is to allow them to test their creation, and putting a boat in the water is the greatest test of them all, he says. It's that celebratory moment when kids finally realize they're capable of anything. It's the big payoff.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
It really is. Not the same scale, but when we had shop class. You know, whether you're making that...
make a birdhouse or make a...
Paper towel holder or a tool holder.
Toolbox thing.
Yeah, taking them home and, you know, dad screws the paper towel holder underneath the cupboard and you get the first roll of paper towel and it actually spins and works. Yeah. And you're like...
And the second roll, it breaks.
Right? Yes.
And falls off.
And my mom's not looking. Oops. Grade 10 student Elizabeth Braun built her very first boat and was thrilled to see the final product of her hard work. Her design featured a clash between fire and water, she says. We'll post that video so people can take a peek at the video.
Yeah.
What goes into it is a lot of hard work with the woodwork. It's a lot of shaving and sanding down, but also a lot of waiting for wood glue and making sure it's leak-proof. That's... Probably
waiting for glue to dry, that's the longest part of the process.
Clamp it and wait and wait. I was extremely excited to see my artwork on the water. I think it turned out great, and I couldn't have asked for a better result. Grade 7 students Danielle Betteridge and Haley Post said the greatest challenge was rowing their boats, which went in circles a few times. Despite that, they still enjoyed the learning experience. And that's what it's about. It's all about the learning, teaching the kids, right? Program has been growing each year, and more community partners are coming on board to support it. Laura Briscoe, the board's special high skills coordinator, said the program lets kids get some excited about school and exposes them to skills they might not learn inside a classroom. Building objects like boats allow them to explore different career opportunities, she says. And for Vine, STEM to Stern is a way to stay connected with this community. Watching students enjoy their creations is an unforgettable feeling, he says. Which you got to think. I mean, as a teacher background, seeing kids doing this well, enjoying it. And
they're actually getting something out of it. And it just gives them I can do something with my hands. I can build something. And it gives them that positive, you know, energy, confidence, whatever going on in any other area of their life.
Yeah. I mean, that's what you get into teaching for, right?
Yeah.
And to see these kids succeed and whatnot. We've built hundreds of boats, and I still get as much as of a rush watching every one of these boats hit the water as I did our very first one. It gives me so much satisfaction to see kids when they step inside their boat, when you see the expression on their face and they're like, oh my God, I did this. I'll never get tired of that.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty cool.
It would be rewarding as the teacher that guides them through it.
Well, and you know, and like I say, they say in the article here, the kids themselves going like, well, I can do that. I can build a boat and it works.
I had no idea I could do that.
Right? Mm-hmm. Something like that. That's a huge sort of thing, right? Then after you build a boat, where do you go?
You build another boat. And
right?
Carve a paddle and carve an oar. Learn to weld.
You got your hands going. You know what to do. You know how to build stuff. You got the confidence.
Lifetime of hobbies and maybe a career.
Right? Stem to Stern. David Vine's the founder, principal boat builder of Stem to Stern. He founded the community organization in the winter of 2018 after a lifetime of educating young people in the craft of woodworking. He understands the value of an exposure to the trades in rounding out the life experiences of today's young people. That's so true now more than ever. Mm-hmm. Because how many of these young kids, their biggest accomplishment is winning at Halo or a Call of Duty or some other video game.
I leveled up in Minecraft.
Yeah. Like I don't know anybody's kids that are out in the garage trying to build stuff.
Build something with their hands.
Right?
Yeah, it might start, like, I can see my daughter learning this and it, like, doing stuff with her hands that is in a artsy way, and because she's talented that way, she wants to build stuff with her hands. I can see Beckett doing it to build cars and wooden cars and stuff like that, right? So,
you know what I mean? Even us as kids, like, we would go out in the garage and build, like, bike ramps.
Yeah.
To try not to kill ourselves. You know?
Yeah.
That sort of deal. But you don't really see as much as that as you used to, so getting them out there and exposure to this stuff is a big benefit.
Well, it's a life's lesson. It teaches you that you can do stuff with your hands, because we don't have that skill set anymore. Like, if you grew up on a farm or you grew up, like, you know, 50 years ago, you had to build stuff to make things, right? You had to build things.
Fix your own things.
Yeah, you had to fix your own things. But nowadays, there's always, and even today, mechanics don't fix things. It's like, well, yeah, we're going to write that car off. It's got a dent.
You know, but we had the conversation that when I was a kid, Saturday mornings at the Canadian, because at that point, stores weren't open on Sundays.
Yep.
So Saturday morning at the Canadian Tire parking lot.
Oh, yeah.
All the guys were there with their cars, and they'd go into Canadian Tire, buy a new
headlight,
and they would change it right in the Canadian Tire parking lot.
There's rules against that now.
And you could fix your own car.
There
was carbon, and you didn't need something that read computer chips.
You didn't, exactly.
Right? Like, right now, something goes on with my car, all these lights come on.
Yeah.
And I open the hood, and I'm just like, well, half the engine's covered with plastic. This, that, and the other thing, I've got to figure out how to get off to look at your engine.
Yeah.
The spark plugs I've got to get at from underneath. Like, I can't just reach down like I did my old 1980s car and change my spark plugs and, you know, everything you could do in your driveway.
Yeah.
Nowadays, I can change tire in my driveway.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like anything else, well, it's not covered under warranty. And who knows, if you hit this while you're doing that, you don't know what's going to happen, right?
John Deere is notorious for this. Like, you're talking, like, you know, $1 million tractors and so on. They need a specialized dealer-provided technician to come in. If you try and work on your own John Deere, avoid the warranty, and it locks out the computer. And you cannot do a thing, and you have to pay a fee to get them to unlock the computer, to get the chassis, the drive shaft, all that, you know, to get the things working again. This, you know,
that
million,
weren't broken to begin with.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And it's like, they call it, there's laws coming in, right to repair laws. The states are big on it. They're trying to force through. But people need to know how to fix their own stuff.
Yeah.
And stuff like this, to build your own boat, to paddle the boat that you built with your own hands and get out on the water. And I think that's a huge stepping stone for kids in life.
David Vine's responsible for directly training the participants in the construction of the wooden boats, as well as working with the funders and other support groups who help launch the boats once completed. And you know what? That's good, because then the people that are spending the money to keep this going actually see the final products, right?
Exactly. So there's evidence of how it's working and what it's doing. And
we're not just taking your money.
Exactly. There's a return here.
Yeah. David previously ran several successful programs leading up to the founding of STEM to Stern, a group of FNMI boys in partnership with the St. Clair Region Conservation Authority, a group of elementary school children with the Thames Valley District School Board, and a group of in-risk grade 10 students in partnership with the Upper Thames River Conservation Authority.
In-risk? At-risk? Mm-hmm. In-risk?
Kevin Callan always calls them at-risk.
Yeah.
So I think it's the same. Potato, potato, tomato, tomato. So STEM, the number 2, Stern. stem.ca, stem to stern.ca, for more information about the organization. It's pretty cool. And they have all these different places they go to, and he helps out with all these different schools. And like I say, 1 week, you get your boats made, right?
Yes.
So that's a pretty cool thing. Hopefully it continues.
You're jumping around. I'm getting lost in our paperwork here.
That was the whole plan. Can't dazzle him with daring, baffle him with bull. So I have a brand spanking new iPhone
15.
15. Is it Max or Pro?
There's four different levels. There's iPhone 15, iPhone 15 Pro, iPhone Pro Max, iPhone.
Okay, I got the Pro.
Yeah.
So I got the i15. I can turn it on. It goes ring. I'll pack it up. I got the 15, brand new 15 Max from work. I wouldn't have one if I didn't get it for work, right?
Yeah.
So backcountry hikers have come to rely on modern technology to stay safe. If a sudden storm or accident places you in a dangerous situation, then you use an in-reach GPS device or a spot messenger to send SOS and ensure that search and rescue can find you. You've got Zaleo. I've got Spot.
Yep.
Right?
There's Zaleo, Spot, InReach. There's a few of them.
Right. If you realize you're completely lost, you pull up the All Trails or a similar app to determine your position relative to the trail and find your way back using the detailed map.
Yep.
Can't say I've ever used one of those.
I have. I used it on the Minas Link for one. I used it on Google Maps. So I pre-download Google Maps on my phone because when you're off-grid, offline. Yep. So I've done that quite often where, on the Minas Link, we were paddling at night a lot. So it was nice to know where you needed to be in the pitch dark. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, I've also used it I used Jeff's map, his previous company map, and so it ties into, I can't remember what the
Avenza
or something, and so it grid coordinates it, so it'll show you GPS coordinates of where you are on the map.
Right.
But what Apple is doing is different.
So a forthcoming update. Now you can use it, like I say, this article is towards hikers, but
yeah.
Just change hikers for canoeists, paddlers.
Yeah.
A forthcoming update from Apple could give hikers all that functionality direct from an iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
When Apple's iOS 18 release launches this fall, owners of an iPhone 14 or later, that'd be me, will be able to send and receive texts and emojis over iMessage and SMS even when cell service or Wi-Fi isn't available. So whether you're in trouble and need help or simply telling mom, I'm okay, a lack of service is no longer a barrier.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of curious on how that's going to work.
It's going to work just like for me, I use Zaleo. So my Zaleo links to my phone and I use my phone to message people or pull down weather and so on, right? So
all satellite. Yeah,
it's all satellite driven, but that's what this is too. The iPhone is going to use satellite messaging and it will give you access to the very basics of messaging. You won't be able to make a phone call.
But probably
you
won't be able to send pictures and all that.
No, nothing
either.
Detailed. Exactly.
Just a text. Moreover, an update to Apple Maps will include some of the best features of all trails, but without paying the popular app's $36 annual fee.
Yeah.
With one update, Apple may offer hikers a way to save hundreds of dollars as long as they have the newer iPhone. Mm-hmm. And that's how they make their money, because these are not cheap.
But when they say it's going to work with the iPhone 14 or 15, it means that the previous iteration of the iPhone already had the hardware. Mm-hmm. So when the software comes out, the iOS 18 comes out this fall 2024, it's going to work backwards into the iPhone 14 because it already has the hardware. So you can use these this functionality.
Just enough to get you hooked.
Exactly.
And then and the 14 won't work anymore.
They haven't said how much this is going to cost yet.
Right?
Well, you're assuming it's going to cost.
I'm not. If you read the articles, Apple Update includes a lot of features more significant to the general population than backcountry SOS calls. Introductory video leans heavily on the inclusion of Apple Intelligence, an AI tool for improving the user experience. By contrast, the features for outdoor recreation were buried in Apple Software Manager said, but they could still have a huge impact on the niche industry of backcountry GPS devices.
Absolutely. And that's where the problem comes in. Think about, so basically people blame Netflix for the death of Blockbuster Video,
mm-hmm.
right? Oh, I can, because when Netflix first came out, they were a delivery. They would deliver CDs, DVDs, or DVDs to your door, and you'd ship them back. It was a mail order business, and then eventually they came into streaming. And once they hit streaming, Blockbuster had the opportunity to buy Netflix when it first came out. Blockbuster goes, "Ha, that's a joke," and they killed Blockbuster. But think about how many industries out there weren't looking forward enough and were killed off by the next iteration. Right?
Now, just remember, video killed the radio star.
Yes, it did. What were the other examples I gave you? I gave you Blockbuster and Netflix. I gave you three examples. I can't remember what they were. But anyways, it's one of those things. This is a tech killer.
Mm-hmm.
So it's potentially all trails. People won't need all trails anymore if they have the iPhone. And
are you going to need your spot unit and your InReach and your
exactly.
Zaleo and all that as well, right?
So I have more to say on this, but let's finish this off first.
So far, Apple has not revealed if sending messages without cell service will come with a fee or other limitations.
This is what I said earlier, yeah.
Right? But the company hasn't charged for emergency SOS messages sent by satellite, which debuted in 2022.
Yes, so they can already do that.
That feature has already saved lives like a stranded snowmobiler. So that's it's going to be they're either going to, if it's life-threatening sort of
I can
deal.
See them not charging necessarily for that part.
Yeah. maybe if it's like to the SOS through an SOS number, but if it's a regular, you know, hey mom sort of thing, they're going to know that's not an SOS. That's not an emergency
You're
number.
You're using satellite
we're
time.
We're
going to charge
that,
you.
Right. It's an open question if Apple's emergency messaging will work as effectively as products made for the specific purpose, such as Garmin InReach. But those devices cost hundreds of dollars to buy, along with a monthly subscription fee. Well, that's same like a phone.
Yeah.
Cost me thousands of dollars to buy this phone and I get a monthly fee.
Yeah. But now think about this. This is not Apple. Apple's going to reap the reward because people are going to switch to Apple. But when it comes to service related charges, that's going to be for us. It'll be Bell, Rogers, Telus, whatever. Mm-hmm. In the States, Sprint, T-Mobile, whatever. Those companies are going to reap the rewards of messaging, satellite mm-hmm. messaging. The phones will have the capability, and all of these individual telecommunications companies are going to be the determining factor of what it's going to cost you to message in the backcountry. And that's where they're going to start making their money. Like, you know, like what data used to cost us a fortune.
Yep.
And now everybody just basically gets 100 gig on their phone because data's practically free nowadays, right?
Yeah.
But this is a new technology, and I can see Bell, Telus, Rogers charging a fortune for it, right?
If Apple keeps out-of-service messaging free on newer iPhones, it could offer a tempting alternative for hikers looking for the cheapest option while getting help in an emergency. Just 8 months ago, Apple named All Trails its 2023 iPhone app of the year. In a few more months, Apple Maps will try to offer users many of the same features.
App of the year. Oh, by the way, we're going to replace it.
For starters, user can browse thousands of hikes in the U.S. national parks, save them to use while offline. The app will filter hikes by length, elevation, route type, just like All Trails. It's also possible for users to create their own custom walking routes in just a few taps. My house to the donut store, my house to the pizza, my house to... according to an Apple news release, Apple Maps users can also download offline maps, which AllTrails only offers in its paid version.
There you go.
So maybe that's the other thing, is maybe they'll have a paid version and an unpaid version.
Yes, exactly. It'd be the free version. This is going to affect AllTrails. This could affect Strava. Strava is very popular for people who exercise and bike and run and whatever.
But I know a lot of people that are biking and
it could compete running with that, right?
Yeah. They can save their favorite national park hikes, custom walking routes, and places to all new places library and add personal notes about them. And for the info revealed so far, it appears that updated Maps app will show elevation gains and losses and hold a library of saved and downloaded hikes. At least for national parks coverage, the library feature alone will give Apple Maps an important advantage over AllTrails, which offers downloadable offline maps only in its paid version of $36 US a year.
Yeah, you'll be able to click on "This is where the monolith is," hike to it.
Ooh. So how will Apple's new feature stand up against outdoor stalwarts like InReach and AllTrails? Only time and gear testing will tell. While some users express skepticism that Apple could outdo specialized map apps like AllTrails, others welcome the idea of saving money. So this is going to be a wait and
see. It'll be wait and see.
Like if it comes out this year, says, hey, we've updated this, you can use it in the backcountry now for only, you know, $30 a year, whatever.
Well,
I'll let other people try it first.
Yeah. Oh, exactly. Yeah. But how I see this, so
the weekend, I'm not giving up my spot.
No, and that's what I'm trying to get at here, is so in the end, like we're talking, this'll help the random user, somebody who's running the trails on their Skidoo somewheres or out paddling locally or weekend warrior types and doing this, that, the other thing. But anybody who does expedition camping, you're not going to rely on an electronic device with a glass front and glass back that's, you know, susceptible to, you know, batteries wearing out in like a day or two and whatever. Like my Zaleo, if I don't message with it, it'll last a week or two on battery, right?
Yeah.
Just pinging, just tracking, right? And so it, I can see where. So with my Zaleo, I strap it to my life jacket. It's always on me when I'm tripping during the day. And I hang it from a tree, and it'll still hang from my life jacket, or I'll unhook it and put it in my tent. But if I'm out on the water, it's strapped to my life jacket. And so it's accessible for the main reason is so it can see the sky. I'm not going to pack it away in the pack.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to put a phone, I'm not going to strap an iPhone to the back of my life jacket or the back of my backpack, because they're very fragile devices with the glass face and so on. And the more you use it, the more the battery, then you have to have battery charging systems and solar panels and so on. Well, the Zaleo is just like, I think when I first was using it and I was like messaging a lot, trying it out, learning how it works in the backcountry, I think I got like 3 or 4 days out of the battery in the Zaleo device. And that's a lot of messaging, checking the weather, testing it out, looking what it can give me. And it even has a limited mapping now about giving your location. But I don't know that I would want to rely on a fragile iPhone to as a life-saving device, as the sole life-saving device. I think it comes in handy, like you fly off the road and you're in a ditch somewhere and you're out of cell service, you need to call for help. Sure, that'll work. But if I'm tripping in the backcountry, I'm still going to bring a dedicated, specialized SOS GPS device that could save me in a pinch.
The other thing, when I take my cell phone on canoe trips, it's in my life jacket, a bag, in a pocket.
Away. Yeah.
Except when I'm taking photos.
Yeah.
I'll whip it out to take quick photos instead of getting my big gear out, right? I'll use that thing to take photos. So now, not only are you wasting battery doing the messaging,
you're taking photos.
You're taking messaging. Photos. And once you start adding the photos on, your battery. I used my spot unit for 3 weeks on a set of batteries, no problems.
Yeah.
On a canoe trip for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Not a problem. All day, every day, it was on. And then I still got a couple extra trips out of the deal on one set of batteries.
Yeah.
Didn't have to charge it, didn't have to worry about it. It was always blinking.
That was the 3?
No, actually, that was my original one.
The original one.
Yeah, the 2 had a bad battery issue.
Yeah, used batteries a lot.
Yeah, but the newer one, I go 2 weeks easy. So and it's still...
I think the Spot X has internal batteries. The first one had... Which one... So the original had lithium batteries? You had to
had to use the lithium AAA or AA batteries.
Yeah.
The new one, or the one I've got has 4 AAAs.
Okay.
Yeah, because I had AAs, and I'm like, oh, I'll have to change them out. And I'm like, oh, well, this isn't going to work.
Do any of the Spots have internal batteries that just charge externally?
That I don't know.
Because that's what the Zaleo is. It's
You just plug that in.
You have no internal access to the Zaleo. There is a charging port and a flap that you open up for the SOS button, but otherwise you have no internal access to the thing, right?
Yeah, no, I just got a little thing on the back that I can take the cover off, put in new batteries. But yeah, I've gone a full season of canoe tripping on one set of batteries.
Yeah, exactly.
On my Spot.
Because all it's doing is pinging your location. There's, like when you start, like my Zaleo, when you start communicating back and forth or pulling down weather, it does eat up the battery. And
and I don't use it for any, I don't want any of that.
Yeah, I do.
Right?
I enjoy that. I enjoy, you know, just, you know, telling my wife where I am, what's going on.
You know what? I set the map and I send it out. Say, you can follow me if you want, but I'm not messaging anybody. Don't message me.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I don't want that outside connection. I know I get this feeling like people are watching me my entire trip, but they're at home following my route on the computer. Yeah. But no, I don't want that outside.
Yeah.
You know, if there's a problem, I'm going to hit that button and the outside's going to come to me.
Yeah. And I can see where this could, for the most part, people are getting out there to disconnect and get away and whatever. And so if you have satellite messaging capability, and we talked about this an episode.
People are going to start getting ticked off with it.
Yeah. So we talked about this, the potential of having, they're talking about putting towers in parks and so you'd have cell coverage. We just recently talked about that. And it's like, how irritating would that be? You're sitting around the campfire and somebody gets a phone call. It's
right.
Like, dude, turn your phone off.
It would be a lot. Okay. You know what? Once, fine. Twice.
Yeah.
I'm not happy.
Yeah.
Third time, that's the last time we canoe trip together.
Yeah.
If you can't go without getting phone calls.
Yeah.
And text messages.
Yeah. Like, I when I first got it, I admit I overused it. I think I irritated Mike Burns a couple times because I was getting so many messages. But I was playing with it. I needed to learn how to use the device,
right? You know, there's a difference with learning how to use it and using it all the time.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right? Like, no. Like I say, the only reason I got my phone is a quick camera.
Yeah.
And I use the notes application.
I did all the time
to do my journaling.
Yeah.
Right? Other than that, I mean, I used to take a notebook and write down everything I did as I went, right? Yeah.
Don't do it in ballpoint pen.
No.
Use a pencil.
But why? Anyway, so we'll have to see when it comes out what the
it'll be interesting to see what comes of it.
Maybe I'll have to try it on my phone, and if it's free, I'll go out somewhere and where we know there's no coverage.
Exactly.
And give it a whirl.
Yeah. But there's a, like, I think it could be handy. It could be, like they said, it's already been saving lives and so on, especially the SOS function. I think what they say, you tap the side button, the power button on the iPhone like 5 times and it brings up the SOS feature. And if you hold down the button on the screen for a certain amount of time, it'll send off the message and whatever. So I think it'll be good for that. It gives you an easy access to, hey, I just dumped in the middle of Lake Ontario. I was out kayaking and I need rescue, yada, yada, yada. Here I am. It gives your GPS locations, your coordinates, and they can come rescue you. But it also might end up getting...
If your phone is protected against water...
Yes.
Like we talked last week, dude had his phone and water. He managed to make the phone call to his buddy...
And it died.
...before it died. So there's that as well.
Yes.
If you're on a canoe trip.
So that's why you don't necessarily want to rely on this. Yeah. It's that's why the traditional devices, because they're built to be waterproof.
Yep. The I can put my Spot in the rain.
IPS 76 or whatever it's called, yada, yada, yada. So It's I can see where it comes in handy, but I can also see where it can become a distraction, where you're trying to get away and unplug, and now you're reconnecting. And
it's also geared towards certain people, not the entire group that buys iPhones.
Exactly.
So, yeah, we'll take a peek, see what happens.
I can also see where it could be abused and misused. Like, there could be rescues called because somebody's kid pokes the button too many times and makes the SOS go off, or somebody's like, my water filter, I broke it, and I'm going to call in a helicopter. And
they get charged for it.
Yes, they do, because it's an unnecessary
call. See, there's the other thing is, does this new services have an insurance? Like, I get an insurance with my spot.
Zaleo has it also.
If I ever have to search and rescue, call in a search and rescue helicopter, the whole meal deal is covered under my insurance.
Exactly. If it's legitimate.
Yes. 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 Yeah.
Yeah. I've lost my leg.
I don't like this guy. I want to leave. He's answering his damn phone too many times.
I've had an argument with my boyfriend. I want to be picked up by a helicopter.
Right? I'm tired of this portaging thing.
It's too hard.
Anyway, let's not beat that dead horse anymore. Yes. We'll try it when it comes out if we can and see how it goes. Onwards. Members of the Ho-Chunk Nation have completed a five-day journey in a dugout canoe. Route took boaters through ancestral Ho-Chunk territory along sections of the Mississippi. Close to 50 paddlers participated in parts of the voyage, which began in Minnesota, passed through Wisconsin and Iowa before ending in Illinois. Up to six people at a time rode in the dugout canoe, which mimics a style of vessel used by indigenous people for millennia. Ho-Chunk Historic Preservation Officer Bill Quackenbush, which we've heard about Bill many times, talking about the Lake Mendota canoes that they found on the bottom of the lake, it says tribal members used fire and other tools to carve the 22-foot-long boat.
22 feet.
Yeah. You were looking for a longer boat? Your 16-footer isn't good enough for your family anymore? Let's get a 22-footer out there. They carved it out of a cottonwood log. We realize this isn't just a one- or two-person job, Quackenbush said it of the effort. It's a community event. You all sit around and share some stories and take turns. Some paddlers rowed alongside the dugout canoe in their own boats. Local leaders and other interested residents joined Ho-Chunk members at various parts of the journey. The most intrepid paddlers completed all 5 days of the voyage. They stayed overnight in hotels along the route. What? Hotels? you had me right up until there. And drove each morning to a new boat launch. Ho-Chunk Nation of Wisconsin began leading dugout canoe journeys in 2022. Each summer, the tribe chooses a route along a different waterway within its ancestral territory. First of those paddling trips started in what's known as the Four Lakes of Madison. It took on added resonance after archaeologists pulled ancient canoes from Madison's Lake Mendota in 2021 and 2022. And earlier this year, the Wisconsin Historical Society announced it had worked with the Ho-Chunk Nation to identify pieces from as many as 9 other ancient canoes in the same section of that lake. And we talked about that a couple episodes ago.
Yeah.
Canoes in that cache are believed to be between 800 and 4,500 years old.
That's incredible.
It's awesome. 2 of the ancient canoes will eventually be displayed at the Wisconsin History Center when it opens in Madison in 2027. That's going to be something to go see at Canucopia.
Oh, yeah.
2027, yeah. Canucopia, and then we'd make a little detour over there to check that out.
Done.
So yeah, pretty cool that they're giving this a whirl in these days and times in a ancient style of boat, and that it's a, like I say, it's a community thing to make it. So the U.S. Coast Guard, and this is sort of this is a horse we are going to beat to death. Pardon the pun.
Yeah.
The U.S. Coast Guard has reported the largest year-over-year drop in recreational boating fatalities in more than a decade. But that encouraging news was tempered by an increase in paddling deaths. So powered boats deaths and fatalities
are dropping.
Are dropping, but paddling deaths are increasing. Again, every week when I'm searching for topics to talk about and stuff, the number of stories.
Oh, I know.
Lost, missing, rescued, recovered.
I saw a few more stories over the last week. Yeah.
Right? According to the agency's recreational boating safety statistics for 2023, overall boating fatalities fell 11.3% from 636 in 2022 to 564 last year. News was good almost across the board, with incidents down 4.9% and non-fatal injuries decreasing 4.3%.
More math.
So the last couple years should have had a powerboat. Flying against this welcome trend was paddling fatalities, which increased yet again in 2023 to nearly 1 in 3, 32.5%. Recreational boating deaths in the United States up from 27.4% in 2022. John Emmons, executive director of Water Sports Foundation, says the number of people involved in paddling accidents, and especially those who don't come back to their loved ones, is unacceptable. Paddling fatalities continue to increase even as overall boating deaths are declining. Since most incidents are preventable, recreational paddling safety advocates, including the U.S. Coast Guard, state agencies, and nonprofits, must rally together to reverse the trend. The Water Sports Foundation is a nationally focused nonprofit boater education organization based in Orlando, Florida. Paddler safety has been the cornerstone of WSF outreach effort since 2016, when the nonprofit launched the first U.S. Coast Guard grant-funded project designed to increase awareness of paddle sports safety. Subsequent grant projects have sought to better understand the causes of paddling accidents. Now, this is something that we've dealt with. How long ago were we in the ABR, Algonquin Backcountry Recreationalists?
God, that was
12 years ago?
Early 2000s.
So we've been dealing with this all the way back then even.
Yeah.
Canoeing, kayaking, and stand-up paddleboarding don't involve headline-grabbing hazards such as high-speed collisions, propeller strikes, flammable liquids, carbon monoxide poisoning. Yet a startling proportion of boating fatalities involve paddlers. One reason is that more Americans are paddling than ever before. Many of them are new to the sport. For example, an examination of recreational boating safety statistics reveal that nearly three-quarters, 74%, of those who died in paddling accidents in 2022 had less than 100 hours experience in the activity, and well over one-third, 39.7%, had less than 10 hours experience.
Oh.
Other words, the paddlers who are most at risk aren't the young guns charging through whitewater rapids. They're ordinary folks who bought a kayak on a whim.
Yeah.
And that's the big thing, is everybody's, oh, look at those guys are going to die going down those rapids.
Yeah.
They've been doing it for 20 years.
But they're the ones less.
They're the ones that are less, because they know what could happen.
And we've seen the post-COVID trend is that, like, remember during COVID, you couldn't find a canoe or kayak to buy anywhere. Like, they were all off the shelves, and so many new people were in the backcountry, and we saw evidence of that in campsites and portages and at the put-ins, at the takeouts. There's a lot of new people.
Yeah.
Which isn't a bad thing. It's nice to see people enjoying the backcountry, but, when you don't prepare yourself for it, like, if you're going to learn a new job, learn a new skill, you're going to learn how to do it. You're going to take a course or whatever, but people just jump out in a boat and go.
Ooh, look, it's on sale at Costco. I'm going to buy one of these and go on the lake.
Yeah. I'm going to get this, sit on top of the kayak and run around and, oh, storm, too bad.
During the pandemic, paddle sports participation soared as record number of Americans took to the water to cope with lockdowns. Paddling fatality spiked 21% in 2020, reaching an all-time high of 202.
Ooh.
Powerboating incidents followed a similar pattern, surging during the so-called pandemic boating boom, before trending back down. In 2023, powerboating deaths were down 17% from the previous year. So, yeah, all of a sudden, there's this big spike during that year, and then mm-hmm. they settled down. We haven't settled down.
No.
The data showed that educating new paddlers presents the best opportunity to reverse the trend. Water Sports Foundation's outreach to newcomers includes an effort to enlist as allies in the fight at the retailers where most beginners buy their first kayaks and paddleboards. As part of the project, the WSF and the Pennsylvania Boat and Fish Game Commission recently coordinated an effort to enlist Dick's Sporting Goods as paddling safety ambassadors, which we've talked about that before, saying, like, you got to get these people that,
yes,
hey, you know what? If you're buying a boat, upsell. You need a paddle. You need
life jackets.
You need a safety kit. Yep. You need. Don't let them tell you you don't need it. Say, hey, these are laws. You need these things.
Exactly.
If this is your first one, you better pick these up too, yep. because if you're caught on the water.
It'll save your life.
Corporate managers pledged to promote more safety recommendations online and in stores, including the importance of wearing life jackets and taking a free paddler safety course. Goal is to educate paddlers who purchase kayaks and paddle boards from the popular sporting goods chain. The effort positions Dick's Sporting Goods as a safety leader among large non-specialty retailers, which sell the majority of entry-level paddle craft in the United States. Joining the effort was the American Canoe Association, which serves the paddling community with a variety of benefits, including paddle sports education. ACA offered free online paddling courses for Dick's employees and customers. So, yeah, if you bought your first kayak from Dick's, ACA is going to offer you a free online course to,
yes.
you know, safety.
Which is good. And yeah. that's where you start, have to start getting people is right at the front end when like people get too complacent in whatever skill they think they've earned. And so they don't think, but if you get a new guy, they'll go, yeah, you know what? I should take a course. Mm-hmm. I should look at this video. I should read up on it.
Yeah. Last year, the Water Sports Foundation found similar success with kayak retailer Tractor Supply when the nonprofit reached out to corporate management encouraging increased safety promotion, such as offering life jackets to paddle sport customers. Tractor Supply now sells life jackets as an addition to their kayak display. Safety advocates applaud this as a huge win for the paddle sport safety.
Absolutely.
The record decline in boating fatality highlights significant strides in boating safety and education, while the increase in paddling deaths underscores the critical need for targeted interventions. Water Sports Foundation, in collaboration with the ACA, PFBC, and retail partners such as Dick's Sporting Goods, is working to equip all paddlers with knowledge and skills they need to enjoy safely. So our thing we always talked about was rental canoe companies. And yes. we saw this in Algonquin. You can go and rent a canoe. They say, here's your canoe, here's your paddle, here's your life jacket.
Mm-hmm.
Have fun on the water.
Yeah.
At one point, I know John Winters, who was superintendent at the time, had talked about building a...
yes, he wanted to start
He wanted a building.
A learning program.
Yeah. So you go to this building, take your canoe or use ones there, and they will teach you how to paddle properly,
yep.
safely. And then you could go out and do it. But then things changed and, you know.
Yeah, he didn't.
Didn't happen.
They weren't able to get the funding to support mm-hmm. it. The interest and the funding were lacking.
But we go out October canoe trips through Algonquin Park, and we're going in and out of some of the main lakes there, the access lakes, Canoe Lake, Opeongo. And when you're coming in, I mean, it's the fall. Everybody's there from all over the world to see the fall colors. And the majority of these people have never paddled before. And you see them out in the bay, you know,
yep.
off of the docks at Canoe Lake or Opeongo. And you're just looking at these people like, oh, you guys should not be on this water.
There was, I think it was Canada 150. I was there with Mike, and we saw this couple. There was three of them. We saw these three people get into a canoe, and so there was somebody who was sitting in the middle, but there was a bow and stern paddler. They plopped themselves in the canoe, and they were facing each other, and they looked so confused.
That it's is like, so common.
I'm like, oh, they're brand spanking new. They have no idea.
And see, this is where you need to hire somebody at the docks to specifically go down and give them a quick course on here's how you sit, here's how you paddle, here's how you steer, here, you know. Yeah.
It is time consuming, but I think it's important. Mm-hmm. Like, as, and at the very least, you have to ensure that you, the people are wearing life jackets.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And yeah.
It's, so there's a perfect example in Wyoming. A raft accident at the Shoshone Canyon in Wyoming left one of three passengers stranded. Dispatch received a 911 call from a caller who had been rafting on the Shoshone River downstream of the Hayden Arch Bridge. Party of three had purchased a raft from a local store that afternoon, decided to float the section of white water below the bridge, which was flowing at 4,500 cubic feet per second and not safely runnable on a raft.
Mm.
Some point during the ensuing float, the raft capsized in the rapids. Two of the subjects were able to get to shore on the south side of the river, while the third went missing. Rescuers learned the third subject had gone through the rapid named Iron Curtain and was able to swim to a small cave on the north side of the river. Search and rescue, along with staff, sheriff deputies and Cody Regional Health EMS personnel, were dispatched to the scene. Search and rescue members gained access to the male subject via the road on the north side of the canyon, immediately deployed two swift water rescue members to contact him. They were able to assist with getting him into a PFD and a harness. Once the subject was safely secured to the rope system, search and rescue rope team members raised him approximately 150 feet to the road, where he was turned over to EMS staff. Man was suffering from hypothermia. He was assessed by EMS and subsequently refused transport to the hospital for further evaluation.
Yeah.
Let's go buy a raft and jump in the river with all this white water fast moving.
We can do it. I saw it in the movies.
And that's exactly, I mean, this could have turned out
so bad. Yeah.
So bad.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what this is saying. Like, this is what's happening.
Yeah.
No education. People are just on a whim. And like I said, these are the ones that are going out just on a whim, buying something and jumping in the river. They're the ones dying. Not the guys that, you know what? If this was safe to run, there probably would have been kayakers there running it.
Yeah.
You know? So, anyway. That's all I got this week.
That's all, folks.
That's it. We were all over the board on topics this week.
Yes, we were. Yeah. But it was an interesting episode. There was a few things there's a few groundbreaking things. Like with the iPhone thing, I think that's very fascinating to see where that's going to go. I'm not sure where it's going to end up, but it's going to be another tech killer that potentially could make big changes. But it's only going to be on a limited functionality. Like, there's anybody big into backcountry camping and major trips are still gonna buy a dedicated GPS SOS tracking device, right?
Yeah.
So interesting. And people have to wear life jackets when you get out on the water. I think it's becoming, I remember when I first learned to ski, people were looked down on when they wore helmets on the ski hills. And slowly over time, people had enough accidents and people started realizing, it's cool to have a helmet. Well, maybe it'll become cool to wear a life jacket.
Eventually.
Right? We got there with skiing and snowboarding. And I think snowboarding...
And bicycling for the most part.
Yeah, exactly. And I think snowboarding is really what changed things when it comes to for skiing and snowboarding. Because it serious head injuries from snowboarding, but it became a thing. And so I don't know how to teach newcomers that life jackets are important when you're out on the water. Because what's going to, if you're hit your head, or if you suddenly become hypothermic, the only thing going to keep you above water is a life jacket.
But you know what? Like, it's not just newcomers either. I know a lot of experienced people. Yeah. Oh, yeah, my life jacket's in the boat.
Yeah, it's within reach.
Okay.
Yeah.
So something happens. You're going down this rapids, and you fall out and smack your head.
Yeah.
Yeah, your life jacket's still in the boat.
Exactly.
You know?
That you're not with anymore.
At that point, it's, you know, each into your own. That's your own. Whatever. But... I'll leave you with this. I'm probably going to touch base on it next week a bit because I'm doing more research. Remember we were talking about that reed boat that we saw
We wanted to get,
I've been doing some research.
Corn stalks or
bulrushes,
cattails. Bulrushes or something. Yeah.
Yeah. And I've been watching sumo wrestling and they have rice.
I've been watching sumo wrestling too.
Are we going to start laying bets on it? We just missed the big, like, 15-day thing over in Japan, eh?
I saw them building a ring.
Yeah, I sent you that. I sent you a video of them, how they still hand-built the center ring. But those bales of rice straw.
Yep.
That would look really... That's, like, really hardcore.
Yeah.
If we could get somebody that has rice straw.
Very floatable.
Yeah. Hmm. Anyway, I've been doing a lot of research.
So yes.
I'll touch on that next week because I still want to find out a couple things. Anyway, other than that, you got anything else?
I do not.
Why not?
Because I've covered it all.
I've covered it
all. And I can't talk about everything. Some of it's secret.
Oh, really? Derek's got secrets. Don't hold your secrets from me. Well, alrighty then. Well, if you want to find out more about us, you can find us at paddlingadventuresradio.com. We're on Facebook and Instagram and YouTube. You can download or stream our episodes, iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, iHeartRadio, Player FM, or you can go to the googly Google and check out our anywhere. We're just everywhere.
Yes, we are.
Or if you have to, go to your favorite podcast downloading site. And if all else fails... You just go to the episode page at paddlingadventuresradio.com and you can download or stream every single one of the 435 episodes from there. And go to YouTube if all else fails that.
There you go.
If you enjoy the podcast, please share it with friends, family, and fellow paddlers. I want to thank everybody for listening this week. I'm Sean Rowley.
And I'm Derek Specht. We'll see you next time.